We're so happy that you've been able to join us during one of our regional conferences or perhaps one of our meetings at the Omega Center International. For the next few moments, I'm going to share some things with you that are very personal to me and also very, very exciting. Most of you who watch our telecast Manifest, which is aired around the world, have observed during the past, let's say, 15 to 16 years, that a large majority of our programs are taped on location in Israel. Now, this is humorous because a lot of people think I live over there. They don't realize that every time we go on our Holy Land tours, I tape between 28 to as high as 36 programs. That's right, 36 programs. There have been times we have taped as many as five a day. And during our tours, we try to tape at least two programs a day with the audience of those who consist of the men and women who have come from across the United States and different parts of the world to join us on our tours. Now, we expanded many years ago. We started off with one station, then we expanded to 70 stations, which includes the Trinity Broadcasting Network and Daystar, which both are global satellite network Christian stations that are viewed either on cable or on satellite or many times on laptop computers and now even on iPhones. Thousands of people come to Israel, not on our tours, but they come to Israel from different countries. And we've met them and they have said, the reason I came to Israel was I saw your programs from Israel and wanted to be there. Now, it's one thing, I have to just say this to you, to look at a backdrop maybe from somewhere where David killed Goliath or where Jesus healed a particular person in the New Testament. And it's another thing to be there. And I'll talk about that perhaps in just a little bit. But one of the things that we have been told by Trinity Broadcasting Network and Matt Crouch is that when our programs are aired from Israel on their network, the ratings are extremely high, not only in the United States, but all throughout the world. And we have a great audience in every nation of the world. I was told recently that there's a place in Africa, actually it's in South Africa, where one of the overseers of one of the big denominations made a statement to Dr. Cutshaw that Perry Stone's name is almost a household name because the Christians in South Africa watch his program. Now, of course, we're not trying to make that common other than we want the messages that God has given us to be remembered and known by the people. And if they remember me, fine. And if they don't, fine. If they don't remember who the teacher was, that's insignificant to me because I want the word to be foremost. Now, people have asked me for years, how did you ever get involved with wanting to go to Israel and teach on Israel and teach Hebraic roots? And that's been an emphasis of our ministry now for many years. Well, it started in 1985, and I hope I have that year right, when one of my dear pastor friends, Floyd Lahan, called me and said, I'm going to Israel next year, and I want you to go with me. I said to him on the phone, I have no interest in going to see a pile of rocks and a desert. And he laughed, and he said, I don't think you quite understand that this is the place where the Bible was written and where all the events of the Bible, or most of them, happened. And it will change your ministry. I had no interest. I literally went to bed that night in the middle of the night. It's like the Holy Spirit dropped in my spirit because he knew that long term. He knew there would be manifest when I did not have a clue back then that would ever happen. And so I called him and I said, well, I'll go with you. He said, well, why don't you just do a trip? He said, you know, a lot of people, you should invite people to do a trip. So we did. We set up a trip with a travel agency that went to Israel that was very well known. Oddly enough, my very first trip, are you ready for this number? We took 120 people, which is the same number which is mentioned in Acts chapter 1 that was there in the meeting prior to the outpouring of the Spirit, which that was very significant to me. I remember that we flew into Jordan and we stayed in Amman, which is a beautiful city, by the way. We went to Petra, which was mind-blowing, and the Indiana Jones movie that he made and taped portions of it, the conclusion of the movie, I should say, in Petra, made Petra world-renowned. And we got to go to Mount Nebo, where Moses saw the Promised Land. And I do remember on Mount Nebo looking over into what we would later see and drive across the bridge to go to Israel and see this beautiful country of prophecy. I remember in the 1980s, there was only one green spot, and it was Jericho. I said, what's that green spot? They said, that's the Oasis of Jericho. If you were to stand on Mount Nebo now, especially in the time of planting and harvesting, it's totally green along the Jordan Valley. The Jordan Valley, where the Jordan River runs from Galilee toward the Dead Sea, is totally green on both sides with hundreds and hundreds of farms, which is really a fulfillment of prophecy. Now, I will tell you this. I've never forgot to this day. They say when you have an emotional moment that it's something that stays with you, or if it's a one-time situation that just really hits your spirit, it always stays with you. I remember crossing the bridge called the Allenby Bridge from Jordan into Israel. And I remember that the moment we got on the bus on the Israel side, I could not stop crying. I was praying in the spirit. I was crying. Gideon, my guide, I was new to him. He didn't know who I was. And he kind of sat there and put up with my emotional outburst. But what I did not expect was the reality to hit me. Oh my, I am where the Bible happened. We were headed to Jericho to eat lunch at Jericho. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, I'm actually eating lunch where Joshua and the children of Israel conquered the first city. And I'd been preaching for years. I had been in Sunday school my entire life, every Sunday at my dad's church. But to be at the location was absolutely overwhelming. And I find out that everybody we take over there, because we fly now to Tel Aviv and we go straight to Jerusalem on many of the trips. And on the second trip, we go to Tiberias, the Sea of Galilee, and then end up in Jerusalem. But, you know, anytime you fly, and I have to do this all the time, but if you fly on a long trip, like from the U.S. to Israel, that one day is so tiring, and then getting to the hotel is tiring. But when you sleep, you take a shower, you sleep, you eat. After about two days, you feel absolutely fabulous. It's pretty amazing. But I never will forget two things on my first trip. One was seeing the actual Sea of Galilee from a hotel balcony and realizing all the cities where Jesus ministered were there, and reading the stories of the Bible and realizing what happened there. The second thing that overwhelmed me was a friend of mine, Richard Woodruff, and I stood on the balcony of a hotel called the La Roma Hotel, which overlooked the old city walls of Jerusalem. And we wailed. We cried till we wailed. Now, someone said, why do you cry so much? Because it's like coming home. I'm going to tell you, this is not a good analogy to make, but it almost felt to me like it would be when a soldier has been in a battle and he gets to come home to his family. The same feeling of seeing your family, and I've tried to imagine this, if this is the same feeling, and it's no comparison, of course, to a soldier, but I'm going to try to make this as clear as I can from the standpoint of what it feels like. But to stand there for the very first time, for me, was like I was a prisoner and I'm now free. Number two, it felt like I'd come home. That was the thing that absolutely stunned me. I thought, well, we're going to go to Israel. We're going to see some Bible places. But when I get there, it's like my spirit is already connected to the land. My heart is already connected to the land. So if you've never been, when you get there, it's actually, oh my goodness, I've come home. And if you read the Bible, this is where we're going to live during the 1,000-year reign of Christ, is Jerusalem. Of course, some of us, according to Scripture, will rule over nations and cities and so on. But every nation, according to Zechariah, will have to come up during the Feast of Tabernacles and worship the Lord there in the city of Jerusalem during the reign of Christ. So I want to thank Brother Lahan back in 1985 who invited me to go. And since then, I have gone every single year except one since 1986. I actually was invited in 85, and I'm pretty sure the first trip we took was 86. And I could be off a year because this is a long time back. One year, and this was early back in the 1980s, it was probably the 1989, maybe 1990, there was a lot of unrest that was being reported on the news, and we had a big trip going, and people started canceling, saying, it's dangerous, my loved ones are telling me I'm crazy. And I knew better because I knew that you can't trust the news. I'm going to expose the news media in the Middle East in just a moment. So I want you to listen to this. But I was in prayer and received a word from the Lord from the book of Joshua, chapter 1, verse 9. And God is speaking to Joshua about the land. He's going to take the land. Have not I commanded you, be strong and of good courage, do not be afraid, nor dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. And I'm telling you, I read that, and it became a rhema quickened word to my mind and spirit. It is still in my spirit deep, and I have never, this is why I have never been hesitant to ever go to Israel, because I have a rhema word from God. He's going to be with me wherever I go, not just Israel, but anywhere. And I've hid that in my heart and had tremendous trips. I've lost count of how many times I've actually gone. It's up in the 30s, 34, 35 times perhaps, because we go twice a year, and I count that as two trips, maybe more than that by now. But one of the reasons that I go is I have gone so much that I feel totally safe in all my trips, which is, 130, 150 days. I've lost count again. I've never seen anything bad. I've never seen anything that frightened me. The trips have all been great. The only thing years ago, we had to deal with some weather issues, and that was it. But I want to say something about the media. We were coming from Bethlehem to Jerusalem, and we were pulling up near a gate, and our guide Gideon recognized a man that was a journalist from the area. And he had a little camera strapped to him, and Gideon was talking to him, and they were, of course, talking in Hebrew. Well, finally, Gideon laughed, and he said, that's a journalist from one of the networks here, and he's going back to Bethlehem because they're going to have a protest. I said, how does he know they're going to have a protest? He said, because those who were over the protest in Israel, this is from the Palestinian side, send reports, and this back then it was faxes, to the journalist, whether it's CNN or whatever it is, that there's going to be a protest. And so they can come and tape it and take pictures. And then I started realizing, I saw this happen one time, and when I say I saw it, I saw afterwards. They actually prepared stones in laundry baskets. They actually were given American flags. They were given, now think about this. People over there speak Arabic, Aramaic, or Hebrew that live in the country, but the signs are in English. And sometimes those holding the signs can't even speak English. The signs are provided to them by organizations who work with journalists or organizations who are anti-Israel. And I could go on and on and tell you about this expose. I can tell you where they took pictures in Lebanon. This was exposed. And it was a building that had gone down with a bombing. It was a terrorist building in Lebanon. And they put a brand new teddy bear on top as though a child had been killed. And a journalist had taken a picture of the guy with the teddy bear earlier before he put it on there. And that's how it was exposed. And I could tell you stories of how shoes and clothes have been planted and just all kinds of things like that. So I do not trust the media. I only trust the people in the land who know exactly what is taking place. And I will say again that all my travels there, and this is what's odd, I've never seen anything that has been negative to me. Now, are there problems in certain areas where there's refugee camps? Yes. And I'll talk about that because I want to help you understand the land of Israel and what is actually happening there. So I've never been hesitant to go because I understand how the media manipulates many times news. But Daniel 12 and 1, not only did I have a word from Joshua 1 and 9, but I was reading Daniel 12 and 1 years ago, and it said, Michael, the archangel, who's the guardian of your people, Israel. And I'm saying to myself, wait a minute. The guardian of Israel is Michael, the highest ranking warring angel that God has in heaven is over the nation of Israel. It doesn't say he's over America. It doesn't say he visits America. I'm sure he has. But he's over Israel. And so I will stay in America and travel on the road and go into towns and eat in restaurants. But I'm afraid of going to Israel because Michael, the archangel, is guarding it. Are you kidding me? And he knows who's there and he knows who's coming. He knows who's in the borders. He restrains evil there according to scripture. And it even says that Michael shall stand up and fight for the people. And even in Revelation 12, it's Michael and his angels that cast Satan and his angels out of heaven in the middle of the tribulation period. So my point is, for me personally, having that word from the Lord has helped me to actually ignore circumstances and ignore what I hear people saying all the time, because I have seen the other side. Now, I remember just a few years back that Hamas in Gaza. And of course, Gaza is a refugee camp that is surrounded by a fence. They don't just roam around. They can't just get in their car and go where they want to go because Israel controls the entrance points of the roads, etc. But they were shooting these missiles in, and these missiles were landing about 80% of 90% in deserts, because from Gaza, look at a map, to Jerusalem, or from Gaza to any of the major cities, it's just miles and actually hours of mountains, nothing but desert. But we had five people cancel their trip, and I told him, I said, I'm going over there. Would I be going if I thought that there was trouble? I have peace about this. And so five people, no, we can't go. God told us there'd be trouble. God, no, that's your fear speaking. We went, and when I landed, I stayed at a place which was 30 minutes from Gaza in the middle of a desert in a camp that was, it's like a youth camp. Saw nothing, heard nothing, and guess what happened? They signed an agreement and all missiles stopped, and both of my trips went great. So this is what I have dealt with over the years. Every year we go, something's happening, but at the same time, the confidence that I have is in the Lord, in the angel of the Lord, and in the word of the Lord, that God is going to help us wherever we go. And he has always done that, even in travels in the United States, of which I give him glory. Now, I want to tell you six things that have amazed me about Israel. And I want you to hear this because I want to build your faith in this as well. The reason I love going to the land is because, number one, it is the only place in the world that can absolutely authenticate all of the Bible. For example, the first time I went, Capernaum was just being excavated. This was the hometown of Peter, just being excavated. Magdala was all under dirt, no excavation. Bethsaida, where many of the disciples were from, it was all under dirt. I remember it had a fence up with landmines. We crossed that fence one time. Don't ever do this. And we were throwing rocks down in order to get to this hill. And that was very unwise. That was in the foolish days. But I mean, just my point is that it was not discovered yet. Chorazim had been discovered. It had been discovered a long time ago. Now I go back, and all of these cities are not only excavated, but are all tourist sites that you can see where Jesus actually ministered. Then every month something is found. They found a stela, which is a stone with an engraving in it. They talked about the house of David. They found the gates of Gath, which were probably built by giants. And I could spend the next 30 minutes telling you what they have found that absolutely authenticates the Bible. So number one, I love going there because it proves Bible history. Number two, you are stunned when you stand in Israel and see how history was made just in one location. My favorite place to stand and show people this is Jericho. Now, Jericho is a big tell. That means a mound. And it has dirt, a mound of dirt with stones from the different time periods that were the walls of the city. And again, Jericho was rebuilt, remember, even after Joshua destroyed it. So it's been rebuilt in history several times. Here's what's amazing. I can stand in Jericho and turn like a clock. Let's start at 12 o'clock directly in front of me. There will be Mount Nebo. Then we see the Jordan River, and we see the area where Elijah was taken up in a chariot of fire. Then we see where the children of Israel crossed the Jordan River near Gilgal. Then we see where Jesus was baptized, not far off in the distance by John the Baptist. We keep turning to the right. We see the Jericho from Jesus' day is 2 miles away. There's the Dead Sea. There's the Qumran Caves. All of that's at the angle of about 2 to 3 o'clock. We then keep turning, and behind us is the Mountain of Temptation where Jesus is tempted. Then there's the caves where the spies held out. We keep turning, and you realize, and then you got the Spring of Elijah there. You got 8 to 10 biblical places that you can see from one location. What that helps you to do is understand the biblical stories of how Elijah goes to Jericho, crosses the Jordan River, is taken up in the valley where Moses is buried below Mount Nebo, but you get to see how it all fits. That to me is totally fascinating. And in Jerusalem, one of the things I like to do in Jerusalem is teach from the Mount of Olives a couple times on the trip, which everybody just loves this location. By that time, we are having a ball. We're having a high time in Zion. And I can stand and turn, and I can show them where Melchizedek and Abraham met. I can show them the Mount Sion, or Mount Zion, as we say in English, where David pitched the tabernacle. You can show them the Pool of Siloam. You can show them the Kidron Valley. You can show them the Eastern Gate, you can show them the pinnacle of the temple where Jesus was tempted, the Hold of Steps where Jesus and the disciples walked up to the temple back in his day, the place of trumpeting, the mikvah where people, Peter may have baptized the 3,000 people not far from the Hold of Steps, St. Stephen's Gate where the Israelis went in the 67 war and captured the city. And there was a bit, you know, the lions are on there, and there's a whole story behind that. I won't have time to get into detail. And then you keep looking, you see the Garden of Gethsemane where Jesus prayed the night. You see the Mount of Olives where Jesus ascended to heaven and where he's going to be coming back again. And all of that, folks, is one spot. All of that is one location. And then I look over in the distance, if I'm preaching to the people over my right, is Bethlehem 8 miles away. And I can see the hills of Bethlehem. And I'm like, you don't get this by sitting in a church, listening to a preacher preach. Now, he may show you a picture, but you don't get the atmosphere. And then when you go there, it's like, oh my goodness, the Bible. Okay. And Jesus crossed the Kidron Valley. There it is. And went to the Garden of Gethsemane. Now you know where it happened. And so I guess the history in one location is the second thing that just stunned me the first time I went, and it still does. The third thing, and this could actually be up at the top as far as my ministry is concerned, is the prophecies that are being fulfilled. Now, years ago, my guide Gideon Shore showed me three places where Bible prophecy in Isaiah and Ezekiel were being fulfilled, and now those places have really expanded, and those prophecies have continued to expand to where Israel is the land where you can go there and actually see ancient 2,500-year-old, 3,000-year-old prophecies, and prophecies that are older than that in the Torah, literally being fulfilled in front of your eyes. And I'm grateful to Gideon Shore, who's been my tour guide for all these years. Of course, he's getting up there in years like we all are now, but he still goes with me on my TV bus. And God has used him to open so many doors for us in friendships and ministry, and also doors in Israel to be able to see things that most people are never given the opportunity to see. So, we are just excited about what God is doing, and we know that these are the last days. Okay, number four is the peace that you sense. Now, I think this may come as the greatest surprise to all the people who maybe are hesitant to go to Israel, and that is the peace that's there. Because again, most of us in the United States, we receive what we believe basically from the news media or what the news media has to say. And it's always negative. There's almost never a report that comes from Israel that is positive in any way. And again, you know, that may be because, and this is not, you know, playing one ethnic group against another, but it may be because that the Muslims, including many of the Arab Muslims, own a lot of the stock in the major networks around the world, whether it's BBC or CNN or whatever. And so they have an interest, if I can say, at kind of directing how the news goes. And so that may be why. But let me just talk to you about this, about something interesting about this idea of peace. You can go to Tiberias and walk around Tiberias without any fear whatsoever. There's restaurants and shops there. Jerusalem is what stunned me, because the first time I went, and it's still this way, in the Orthodox section, you will see children that are 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, etc., with backpacks, holding each other's hands, going to school without adult supervision on the streets. There's no way I will let a 6-year-old walk to a school in Cleveland, because more than likely they're going to get abducted by some pervert. The Arab kids are the same way. A lot of the Arab children, even Muslim children, go to Catholic schools because they're known as the best schools as far as education. And they also teach, or allowed to teach, the Bible in the Catholic school. And there are a good number of Arab Christians scattered out throughout, of course, Israel and the West Bank, and even down in Gaza. But the point I want to make is the biggest surprise that most people have that have ever gone with me there is, why, I can't believe how peaceful it is. Because what they're expecting, I don't know what they're expecting, but they're expecting to stay in a beat-up hotel, which they don't, eat food that's no good, which they don't. The food is great. Or expecting to see fighting all over the place, which does not happen. Most of the Palestinians and Israelis actually get along. Now, the Palestinians don't like the Israeli army and the checkpoints, okay? You have to admit that. But as far as business associations and doing business together, it's gotten a whole lot better than the media shows you. Because, you know, when you go up into Lebanon where Hezbollah is, or you go to Gaza where Hamas is, it's a different world down there. And I have to admit that. But the people that are in between that rule the cities and the towns and the restaurants and so on, you know, they depend on tourism. So it's a different situation. Now, number five that I have to tell you about is it is incredible how how much fun you have. Yes, that's right. Going to Israel, you got to go with a good group. You don't want to go with a dry group or a boring group. I'll just say it this way. If you go with our group, you're going to have fun because one of the things that is the highlight of everybody's trip, and I usually don't say anything about this, but since we're talking about Israel right now, and that is that there's a boat ride in which if we have, 100 people or less, we get on one boat. If we have 200 people or more, we tie two boats together. Now, they go out separately, we tie them together. We get out there, and they start playing songs, and people start worshiping. And I'm telling you, I have seen Baptist and Methodist and Catholic folks with their hands raised. I've seen them get up and do a little dance, you know, not necessarily some dance in the spirit, but they are so happy and the anointing, and we have so much fun. I have laughed. I have laughed at some people that they don't have rhythm. You know what I'm saying? They're trying to get in the flow, and they just don't have rhythm. And I don't ever point that out and say, hey, look at this sister over here. She don't have any rhythm. But it is so much fun. The baptismal, to be baptized in the Jordan River where Christ was baptized, it really is almost life-changing. That was an experience for me the first time. Again, I cried and cried and cried. But to be there in that area and say I'm being baptized in memorial of what of Jesus' baptism and in the fact of, you know, and most people have been baptized in water that are born again or should be, but it's just something that pilgrims have done for centuries is to baptize as a sign of their affection and love for Christ in the land where he was baptized. So it's more of a tradition than anything else, but you can do that during our trip. There's much more I could say, but let me just give you one more thing, and that is this. It's amazed me, and this is something that is amazing. When we get to the month of September and October, my team, which is me and Charlie and Robbie and his wife Tammy, that's our main team of the TV team, we start looking to go to Israel like you can't believe. Now, here I have been. I've lost track of how many times, 30-some times, and this is the part that's amazing. It never gets old. It never is boring. And I still feel that same spiritual atmosphere as the people gather together to hear the teaching that I have felt from the very beginning in the 1980s. And that atmosphere may actually be building up more because there's so many Christians. There's 4 million a year at least that go to the Holy Land from around the world. And so they are creating a spiritual atmosphere there. And Jerusalem is one of the most spiritual cities in the entire world because it's one of those cities. The other place where prayer goes nonstop is in Medina, where the Muslims pray at Mecca. But For Christians and Jews, the Western Wall, prayer, winter, shine, spring, it doesn't matter. Somebody is always praying at the Western Wall. It's the most prayed. It's a location that receives more prayer for Jews and Christians than any place else, literally in the entire world. Now, what I have found out, and I want you to hear this because this is very important. There are three scriptures that I want to give you how the Lord blesses those who stand with Jerusalem or stand with his people. Now, it doesn't mean that the Jewish people do perfect things or they make right decisions all the time in Israel. So supporting them doesn't mean you support everything they do or how they treat certain people or even some of their military political decisions. That's not the issue. It's supporting them from a spiritual perspective. So look at this. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. They shall prosper that love you, Psalms 102:16. Then Genesis 12:3 and also chapter 27:19 says the same thing. The Lord says to Abraham and to his son, I will bless those who bless you and I will curse those who curse you. Then the Lord says in Psalms 128:5, the Lord shall bless you out of Zion and you shall see the good of Jerusalem all the days of your life. Well, when you take a trip or when I take a trip to Jerusalem or Israel, what a lot of people may not be aware of is one tourist provides jobs for 11 people. So if I take 200 pilgrims on a trip or 100 on a trip, think about how many jobs I've helped to bless the people with. Then when I pray for Jerusalem and I pray for Israel and I pray for the eyes of the people to be open to the gospel, there's a special blessing and favor that comes on me. Now, think about this. He curses those who curse Israel. The Egyptian empire collapsed after attempting to destroy Israel at the Red Sea, and God, of course, destroyed the enemy, Pharaoh, and his army. The Assyrians took 10 tribes captive, but they were later overthrown by the Babylonians. The Babylonians took the Jews captive for 70 years. They were later defeated, destroyed, and overthrown by the Media Persia. The Medes and Persians were actually friendly toward Israel. And then you have the man called, the Greeks came through Alexander the Great, and he too became friendly toward the people of Israel. But Antiochus Epiphanes, who came up during that time, persecuted the Jews, defiled the temple, and later the Grecian Empire completely, you know, it fell into four different regions, and that was the end of it. Then the Roman Empire came. Romans destroyed the temple in 70 AD, and whatever happened to the Roman Empire? I mean, it collapsed and literally was overrun by four Germanic tribes. Seemed like all of Europe started migrating to Rome, Italy, and it collapsed the government, and it collapsed the Western Empire. It's a long story. The Third Reich of Hitler taking over country after country. But when they attacked the Jews and killed 6 million Jews in the Holocaust, what is Germany now but just one nation that sits in Europe when it used to control just, and you can see that there were Charlemagne and the Germanic empires and the First Reich, the Second Reich. You can go into all the history and realize that Germany was a power house all through Europe until World War II, and then they diminished into. So what I'm saying is that it's very clear that empires die in Jerusalem, that when they come against the people or the temple or the city or they try to seize the land when it doesn't belong to them, they come under the disfavor of the Lord. I will tell you, and without going into the details and confidences I'd rather not speak of, that most of the blessings that we have received here at OCI, ISO, or VOE have come through our support of Israel and the Jewish people. And that's all I'm going to say. It just seems that God has used that and has confirmed to me personally and fulfilled his word by using our ministry, our teaching the Hebraic roots of Christianity, of teaching the history of the Bible, and being positive toward going to Israel and taping there and showing the world what is happening there. And we're very, very grateful to God for that. Now, I want to take a moment because so many people have said to me everywhere I go, I'm going to Israel with you one day. I'm going to Israel with you one day. So let me talk about that for a moment and help you understand this, because I have discovered, I've had people say, do a tape, please. We had a big meeting with 100 people at the Prophetic Summit, wanted to go to Israel. They said, would you do a tape to tell us some of this information, because we don't know about it and it makes us feel more at ease and more comfortable. So let me just talk to you about this. First of all is the safety factor. Israel is a safe place to visit. Jordan is a safe place to visit if you want to go to Petra, which you should if you ever make a trip. If you're going to make a one-time trip to Israel, just go and put out to go to Jordan. The hotels are fabulous there. The food is incredible. And Petra, I can't even describe it to you. That's all I can say. I cannot describe it to you. There are troubled spots in Israel, which are the refugee camps where the Palestinian refugees sometimes do an uprising, or they burn tires, or they throw rocks at soldiers or something like that. And the Gaza Strip, which is near the border of Egypt, has over a million refugees in it. And they're the ones that cause the most trouble for Israel from time to time. And then they make a treaty, and then somebody comes along and starts shooting these missiles in. And again, they're not professional military missiles guided by, because all Israel does is they find out if they're using computers, and they'll just go in and bomb the building and blow the building up where the computers are, and that's the end of it. See, so my point is Israel knows what's going on inside its country and will take care of themselves. And when troublemakers come, troublemakers are in trouble. If someone does something like stab a soldier somewhere, okay, look, now someone says, oh, you mean they stab soldiers? Look, Chicago had 70 shootings, criminal activity shootings in one weekend. And so we're going to talk about somebody over here doing something that makes national news in Israel, but nobody talks about those precious kids that are killed in Chicago by these gangs and drug dealers. So let's, you know, you can't compare this, because we're the ones that have the big crime in the United States. Israel deals with criminals. They arrest them and stick them under the jail. But if someone were to attack a Jew, they go in and just destroy the home of that person. You're going to have a home destroyed. And that's how they deal. They know how to handle things. 4 million tourists a year come. They're coming from all over the world. And it's very important that when we do a trip, you get your room booked as soon as possible because it's becoming more difficult to get hotel rooms. Jewish people are actually renting out their apartments to people coming from America because they don't have enough hotel rooms. I'm telling people, you can't play with this now. We used to be able to take people up to the, you know, 1st of October, 2nd week of October, because Israel wants to know who's coming 60 days out now, because they do background checks on people before they ever come in the country. So here again, they've got the country well under control. But, you have to really understand how many people come and how they protect the people. And again, I've gone all these years, never seen anything that would make me say, oh, I'm not coming back here. Tiberias is a tourist town. That's where we stay a couple nights. Both of our groups, the partners tour that we take first, which is a limited number of partners, and then the main tour, which follows up right after the partners are leaving. And all this happens in the month of November, and I'll tell you why in just a moment. But people are out there with, you know, walking and Jerusalem. And now in Jerusalem, I tell people not to walk because you'll get lost. You don't have a GPS. And I'm telling you, you can take two turns and you're thinking, oh, my goodness, where's my hotel? Because you're in the middle of just a bunch of apartments and buildings there. So you have to be careful doing that. But Tiberias, everybody can find the hotel there. And there's, you know, sometimes we walk up to McDonald's and buy French fries. There is a McDonald's. I think they call it McDavid's. So they have a McDavid's there, but they don't put cheese with the meat, so you're not going to get cheese on a cheeseburger over there. But again, the troubled areas are in a whole separate location, and I've never seen anything negative. So Israel takes care of itself. So don't look at the news. I mean, when you see this going on and that going on, and there's a threat of this and a threat of that, just I want to say one thing. The U.S. and Israel has one weapon that if they use it could literally stop any war. Now, it would set a country back for 50 to 100 years probably, but it would destroy the computers. It would destroy everything related to missiles going off or whatever. And so, you know, if need be, they'll use that in the war of Gog and Magog or in time to come. I don't know. We're talking prophecy now. But I want you to remember something about the U.S. news. Ratings go up when there is anything involving Israel or the Middle East on national news. Ratings plummet when there's nothing negative going on. That's why the news media reports negative news, because that's what people watch. And understand, many of the protests are pre-planned. Also understand that they sell these tapes to other networks and make money. It's all a money racket business with the news in many instances. And so when they put Israel up, ratings go up 10-20%. It can go up bigger depending upon the story. And so now they can sell commercial time by saying, wait a minute, right here during our news time, look at what Nielsen ratings said. 800,000 viewers. See that? It's going to cost you more. And so it's all I know a lot about media and how media works. So I'm just kind of giving you a little insight there that the motive is not to report the news. The motive is to change the opinions of the world toward who owns Jerusalem, who owns the land, and toward the Jewish people, and also to create a very big ratings spike for the news networks, which they depend on because of the competition they have with other networks. Now, I said a moment ago that I always go to Israel in November, and the question is why? All right. In the winter months, you risk ice and snow in New York and New Jersey. All the towns you go out of, or the cities you go out of, like if you go out of JFK to LaGuardia, if you go out of New Jersey, then it can be iced or snowed in. Now, they can fly during snow, and they de-ice the planes. But the point is there can be delays getting in, coming from other states into those places. Also, it can snow in Jerusalem. There's been 6-8 inches of snow from time to time in Jerusalem. So that's why I don't go in the winter. And number two, I don't want to tour in the cold. And it can be cold. That's just me. All right? And Jerusalem will be very cool that time of year. The desert may be cool but comfortable. Tiberias is cool and comfortable, but still, the winter, that's out for me. People have asked me to go during a festival. No. The airports, and I'd love to do it, don't get me wrong. I would love to be there. But the crowds are unbelievable. Now, there's crowds all year in Israel, but every festival, the crowds, they come from all over the world. Plus, you have the Jewish people. Don't forget this, not just tourists, Jewish people coming to Jerusalem. And there's times that just trying to move through traffic in some of the cities, you just can't hardly do it. And so for me personally, I don't go during any of the festivals. I'm not against anybody who does, but God bless you, more power to you. I'm sure you'll have a good time, but I'm just not going to go because of that, the crowds. Summer is way too hot. I used to take a trip in May until I had a woman pass out at one of the caves of Qumran, and I said, I'm not going to do this again because it's a dry heat, but it can get very hot. And if I'm taping a TV program, the last thing I want to do is have makeup on with all that sweat pouring down my face, sweat underneath my arms. And so we go in November for this reason. The weather is usually very nice, like Southern California in most places. It can get cool in Jerusalem, but still, you can have a little bit of rain. Sometimes it doesn't rain at all. Sometimes it rains in the morning. Sometimes at night. Sometimes you'll have a day of rain. And you just work your schedule according to that as well. And the crowds are lower toward the end of the month. So this is the reason I go in November. I always take two trips. I always take a partner's trip first. And then right after the partner's trip, I take what's called the main tour. And because we've gone so many times, and I have gone. I went one time right before they were threatening a war to break out, and I had one bus of people, and we were this is the truth, we were the only bus in the country. Everybody had canceled but me. The people still talk about it. We saw everything. We saw things that most people don't get to see. We took a Jeep trip to the desert in this massive Jeep to the Mount of Azazel where the scapegoat was. So, and I will tell you about our trips. You know, when people book with us, there's an itinerary that the travel agency sends out, but you can forget that itinerary because if something new has been found, we're going to go there. If there's an excavation that's been done, we're going to go there. If we can get permission to go to some place that's heavy and new, we're going to go there. And so that's why I tell people, just take the itinerary lightly because we're going to go places, hopefully, that a lot of people, and I say a lot, that most people, the average tour group is not going to be able to see. I want to mention this, and that is that in our trip, in every trip we take, whether it's partners or the main trip, we try to put everything in that price, okay? For example, your round-trip airfare from a major hub like New York, New Jersey, etc., to Tel Aviv and back is in that price. All tips to drivers, guides, waiters at the restaurant, the people taking your luggage is paid for. You do not have to tip anybody. We do an additional tip for the guide and driver at the end. That's a trip, kind of a love gift for them. Every bus can do that. Everybody has their own individual bus. Everybody has their own individual guide. Everybody has their own individual driver. All of your entrance fees are paid for, and the entrance fees that we add that are not in the itinerary are all paid for. We've never asked you for – I've added three parks one time, which cost the tour company like $50, and they ate it. You know, we don't do that. We don't collect money afterwards. We have one soft drink for lunch and dinner, which is always extra with other groups. That's $3 to $4 depending on where you eat. We include lunch. Our lunches are about $30 a person. Everybody else just lets you do your own lunch, or you have to get it on the side. And that's about $200 in lunches that are already included. Most groups do not include lunch. I'll just tell you that up front. And, you know, it's a double room occupancy. You can get a single room supplement for one person, but it costs a little bit more. They use U.S. dollars. You don't have to exchange your money. And I will tell you this also, what you will need, and those where the travel can help you get this, the extra will be you need a domestic ticket to and from the airport where you're leaving international. Like if you live in the Midwest, you're going in, out of New York, you need a ticket to and from there. If you can drive there and have somebody drop you off hours and hours before and get through security, that's the best way of doing it if you can do that, because you don't have to, you know, worry about a ticket then. Not worry, but get, you know, have to pay extra. Everybody needs a valid passport, and you need to check it to make sure you've signed your passport, and it needs to be 6 months valid from the time you're leaving. So look at your date and back it up 6 months and make sure it doesn't run out, because you can't leave if your passport is run out or running out. I just want to mention also, now this is very important, that before you go on this trip, if you ever go with us, I will send you a packing and instructions tape that covers every step of the trip, from how to pack, your luggage tag, how to get to the airport, what to pack, how much, you know, you take $51 bill for drink. You know, on our buses, there's a refrigerator in the dash, and we keep cold water on every bus. And if you were to stop at a store somewhere, it's $2 to $3 a bottle. Some of them even want to charge you $4. We charge $1 a bottle, and that's fantastic. We provide that for people when some groups, you know, don't even pay attention to anything like that. So we do a lot of things. We include the baptismal robe and towel, for example. where other groups have to pay extra for that. So everything's in the price. But I will send you a packing instruction tape. If you're ever interested in going with me to Israel, go to peristone.org and look up the information on our website, or you can contact Noseworthy Travel. Now, I have been going with Robert Vandermont and Noseworthy Travel since about 1988. And I'm going to give you a number, and I want you to write this down. It's 1-800-929-4684. 929-4684 and option 2, because it will say your option. So you hit option 2, and that will connect you to someone who knows about the Israel trip. And, you know, basically before you go, you can send your deposit into the tour company, and then the tour company, I think you have to have it paid. I don't know. I'm not going to get into that because if I say something wrong on the tape, but of course, it has to be paid well out before the trip, but you don't have to pay it at one time unless you're getting close to the time of what we call the conclusion of being able to take people with us, which usually is sometime around September, maybe end of September, might be able to get you on the 1st of October. That's all going to be dependent on airspace and hotel space. And that's why I tell people, my goodness, please get on while you can. I do hope that sometime you'll allow us the privilege of taking you. I love teaching on location. I use the best guides. You're going to learn more than you ever learn in your life, but I love teaching you on location, and you get to participate in the manifest tapings. And then possibly you get to see yourself on television. So I've had some people say, don't put me on. So I say, okay, go back there and stand if you don't want to be on. But it's a lot of fun. And I'm grateful for friends and partners who allow us the opportunity of taking them. And so if you ever get the opportunity to go to Israel, go. I promise it will change your life. It'll be the greatest journey probably you will ever make in your lifetime. Again, thank you for your time, and God bless each of you and keep you. Remember, contact us at our office number is 423-478-3456. 423 area code 478-3456, or simply go to peristone.org and check out things that way. Well, thank you so much again for your time, and God bless you and keep you, is my prayer.